bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello. Welcome to the Photo Show. We're here to discuss the week's photographic news with a document that I've compiled a little bit of this week as well. I've done some useful work for the network for once. And James Neilmanson as well has done the rest. Thank you very much, James. You're very, very kind. Joining me to discuss this week's news, I've got the fantastic panel of Mr. Chris Forsman. How you doing, mate?
Hello.
How's your little burgeoning offspring?
Doing great.
I saw you tweeting out earlier in the week about what the first word would be, and not a lot of it seemed appropriate language, I have to say.
There were three possibilities. Two of them seemed perfectly appropriate, so that's two-thirds appropriate.
Two-thirds appropriate. Jolly good. What's it going to be then? What did you put your money on? I said that your first words were going to be burp for this thing.
I think it's going to be the F word.
If it's around you, yeah.
Yeah.
Read your tweets. Next to him, in an artistic environment, in an art studio, with a fantastic, kind customer who's let him come in at the last minute and help us out and do the show, Mr. Alex G. Fox. How are you doing, pal?
I'm all right, thank you.
Are you on your MacBook or on your good...
No, I'm on a Mac Mini and various things in front of me.
Cool.
Which is only actually used to enlarge paintings normally, so you can see detail. So I'm amazed it's all working quite so
it's
well.
It's good seeing you in HD with light, mate.
Oh, you say that until you look at me.
Normally you're ensconced at the back of your place with hardly anything going on.
That's the way I like it.
The week's news in photography. There's been actually a fair few little releases. The first one we're going to talk about is the Fujifilm 18-55. Now, I've looked at a couple of shots of this, and it looks pretty pleasant. It's a metal-barreled 18-55 replacement. I mean, the two questions I was going to ask was, A, do you need to replace your 18-55 and buy body only anyway? And then Chris decided he got one of these. Good lad. He's got a review unit. We like that. So here you go then, Chris. Now's your time. Review boy. Come on, come on.
Well, I can only give superficial impressions so far. I haven't really got a chance to use it.
Most people write in saying your views are superficial.
Oh, great.
But go on.
But it is, and if you've seen any of the X series Fuji cameras, like the X1 Pro, it's precision machined. It's very smooth, very nice to handle. But this is the first zoom for that series. Originally, earlier this year, they only released 3 primes, so this is the first zoom. But it's just like the prime. I mean, it's just like the primes. It's heavy. It's solid. All the focus ring and the zoom ring are. I mean, it's just amazingly smooth. It's just not what I'm used to, really.
So it feels well built.
Yeah, even compared to like the L series lenses, it feels much more impressive, frankly.
Really? I mean, the question I was going to say was, is it really worth taking your 18-55 if you buy a kit lens to go with the camera instead of buying body only? You invariably get an 18-55 and it's the basic Canon 3.5 to 5.6 or something like that, or the same thing probably with the Nikon. I mean, I've never bought any of those. I've always bought body only, so I've never had an 18-55 that's a piece of crap, but are they a piece of crap? And B, is this worth the extra money? Because this is coming in at about £600, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, those type of kit lenses, A, are kind of a piece of crap. They're just almost all entirely plastic. They feel flimsy. They're reasonably sharp. Yeah, I mean, at this point, with the computer-aided lens design, it's like, it's kind of hard to make a crappy lens, but they're not, you know, they're nothing to write home about. This is a solid, you know, metal lens. The aperture range is 2.8 to f4, so it's a lot brighter than your typical kit lens. And, you know, I'm honestly looking forward to getting a chance to try it out. I've got an XE1 review unit to put it on, which, so far, it doesn't seem as quite as sturdy as the X1 Pro. Doesn't have the hybrid viewfinder. It's not as solid and thick, tough metal. So it's kind of a lighter weight option. Maybe it's probably geared a little bit more towards some, you know, it's a cheaper camera, but it still has the same sensor. So, you know, the image potential is there. So, but yeah, I mean, it's a great lens. And you know, and for this, these X series Fuji cameras, they don't, you know, they don't have a cheap kit lens like that. You know, they have these three primes, this new zoom. I think there's only maybe two other potential lenses planned for the rest of the year.
Mm.
Early 2013, so it's a pretty small lens system, but you know, it's definitely a niche product, but Fuji's being serious about it and making it really nice.
Well, and you, I mean, 18 to 55 is a very utilitarian range of focal length, most definitely, and to get something at £600 for 2.8 as well all the way through, that's not a bad lens to be picking up at that price. And it's useful. It's going to be very useful wherever you go. You're not going to get a lot of softness, are you, at the top end, because it's a short focal range. So it seems like a decent price. Alex, any thoughts?
Well, I don't know how well you remember, but when I first started doing this podcast shenanigans with yourself and Mr. Swager, as I like to call him, he used to refer to me as Mr. Fujifilm. That was my first, I mean, it's a pretty inappropriate nickname, but it was a nickname.
It was.
And it was. And I really did, before I became stuck, if that's the right word, with Nikon, I really enjoyed Fujifilm as my first, you know, expensive foray into digital cameras. And I quite like the idea of them limiting what they produce, but making it a better quality. And they used to make some nice lenses before we started. I'm really sure that Minolta and Fuji had some link with the lenses, even if it was just the mount. And, you know, they were making good lenses. I think they were all branded Minolta, but they were making good lenses at the time. I'm just glad to see that there's someone else. So at the moment, we've got Sony that are doing really well. Fuji have always done well in their bridge range. I like the idea of them putting a bit more effort into the, you know, the DSLR full-size range.
Mm.
And they used to, all I can say is when I used it, they used to make some very, very good, sturdy equipment. And it looks like that's what they're going for. They're going for, you know, not cheap plastic rubbish. They're going for something that, you know, a lens like this, unless you really go out your way to damage it, it's going to last you 20, 30 years as long as you look after it. Whereas some of these cheaper plasticky things, I don't know what the longevity of them are.
Your resale value is going to be pretty good as well on these things, it's on eBay and so on. As long as you keep your lens scratch free, these things are going to go on and they're going to sell well.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry too much. Focus Maker have released the Focus Maker. This is a 6-point follow focus ring that sets on your lens, and if you're shooting video or you want very quick focus changes, you can set this up with predetermined points so that you know exactly where to be, and you just follow the focus ring around until it makes the point and take your shot. Now normally I look at these things and then after the show I go and buy them. Problem is, I've already bought this. It's $89 or €79. There we go. Any thoughts, guys?
No.
Well,
sorry?
This is the type of thing I think we were talking about maybe last week or the week before about all these, you know, DSLRs are having this great ability to shoot HD video, and so they're kind of taking over as like these rigs that people use to shoot footage, and so they're coming up with all these kind of like attachments and things to make it more suitable for that kind of work. This is one of those things that we're seeing.
I mean, this thing looks light and breezy and airy to use. It looks very simplistic in terms of the way that it runs mechanically. I just took one look at it and read the promo on it on their webpage and focusmaker.com, and I just bought it. I couldn't see why not to.
I can.
Go on.
Well, did you say $89?
Yeah, it's $89 or it's €79.
Well, that's a reason not to buy it.
Why?
Because of... I mean, I'm only looking at a picture, and I can sort of work out what it's trying to do. And it's a glorified protractor with some adjustable stops on it.
I'm not disagreeing with that, though. No, that's fair enough.
That's exactly what a follow focus is.
Yeah, so I'm saying the idea, wonderful. The even if it's a very good one of those, it's wonderful. But $89 is close to making me want to say something inappropriate.
Really?
It's too much money. You know, you buy your Chinese knockoff and it will be $4 on eBay. You know, it's worth... All right, give them the credit of designing it and building it, but, you know, it's not $89 of anyone's money, not even yours.
Thanks, Alex. If you've got any questions for Alex, I'd ask him today because he won't be coming back. What is it with you? You just put you in a different environment and you turn into a telethon?
No, honestly, it looks... I mean, I get what the point is, and you know, it could be beautifully made, but...
Well, I'm hoping it is when it arrives. If it's not, it's going back.
Put it in context, that's a seventh of the price of that lens we looked at previously. You're telling me that that's got a seventh of the value of the manufacturing of all the rest of it.
And a half.
Beautiful Fuji lens.
And a half, mate. You want to see the crap I've had to deal? Because I don't normally shoot video. I shot last year. I shot 90% stills, 10% video. This year, I've shot 90% video, 10% stills. Certainly in terms of data. And I've had a bit of an education, I have to say, in moving from one discipline to the other quite wholeheartedly. And I have got myself, I've set photo rigs up on my camera using bits of tape to try and get the focus right. And I would have screamed for this 3 weeks ago. Absolutely screamed for it. So I'm buying it on the basis that I can afford it and it really is well worth the money for me. And it looks like it's a well-made, well-thought-out product. That actually functions. That's where I'm spending the money. So I don't care what you think, folks.
Is what you're saying. No, I mean, 2 points. First one is I can understand your point of view, but one of the things as photographers we're used to, and moving into videography, you better get used to, but you're just bent over a barrel. You know, what we pay for things in general is just completely ridiculous for what we get. It's just, you know, they don't make bucket loads of them. In general, professional photographers pass the cost on. And it's almost like, you know, a private members club. There's like the nudge, nudge, wink, wink. We're going to charge you a grand for this lens that's worth 500 quid, but you're going to pass it on to your customers. And if we all keep quiet, at the end of the day, we all make a few bob. And it's a bit like that. And it's always been like that in the cost of photographic equipment and video even worse. And just responding to Sarah Jane's comment, which is quite right, it's called paying for the research, and, you know, the value of this thing. There is no research into
it. I was just about to agree with you. There's not a lot of research in this. It's just built well and it's functional. That's what you want in this thing.
But, you know, I mean, I'm not going to back off from my it's a glorified protractor because that's exactly all it is.
Yeah. Fawzi, any thoughts?
Sorry, I was too busy getting off Alex's lawn. He's gone full on curmudgeon.
I'll be on the grassy knoll before you know it, mate.
Oh, blimey. Nikon have decided to not support some of their own programs with Windows 8. They've issued a list. Nikon Europe have put a statement out, and they've said that they plan to test with versions of the following software for Windows 8: VionXX2, Capture NX2, Camera Control Pro, Short Movie Creator, Nikon Massage Center 2. Message Center. That's what you get for being dyslexic. Why a Nikon got a massage center? And a whole pile of other stuff. And they've dropped out a whole load of other programs there. Capture NX, Camera Control Pro, Nikon Capture, View NX. Now, I've never used Nikon, so Alex, you're going to have to fill us in here. Are the programs that they're absolutely stating they will not check compatibility with Windows 8, are they old programs here?
I'm legacy? Looking through what I would use. Capture NX version 1. I don't know anyone that's used that for 3 or 4 years.
Right, okay.
So I'm looking at it. Basically, they've got this point and they're saying, you know what, it's a new operating system. We're not going to support legacy software. And that's more or less what I'm looking at in the list here.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, it's the first time I've seen it. It's all legacy stuff that they're not supporting.
There's nothing in there that you think's kind of been hatcheted a bit too soon?
No, not at all, because everything that's in there has got a new version.
Right. Okay.
And, you know, it just means don't upgrade to Windows 8.
So if you're a Nikon dinosaur and you use it, then get yourself over to Nikon Europe and have a look at the list that they've issued. There's also a copy on nikonrumors.com. I can't believe Nikon's got its own rumor site.
I use it for
some time.
Bam.
But I would also say that looking at knowing some of this stuff, the probability is a lot of it will work on Windows 8 anyway.
Right, so you can use backward compatibility, presumably, yeah, within Windows OS itself.
Not in the some of these. There's not an awful lot in them. USB drivers, well, to be honest, I imagine if it's 64-bit, it will work anyway. You know, things like that, there's not an awful lot in there. And the scan series, I mean, there's only me and another person that own a scanner.
Fawzi, anything to add?
Yeah, just following on the point Alex was making, I mean, if it works on Windows 7, it should work on Windows 8.
There shouldn't be any issue.
Maybe they're just trying to cover their ass and say, you know, we're not promising it works, but
no. Okay, fair enough then. VistaQuest have released a disposable digital camera. This is the VQ10 single-use digital camera. It's going to cost you about £12, and effectively you just pop away and then you USB plug it into the bottom and you take your images off. I've got absolutely, I mean, it's the battery that's causing the limitation on it being disposable, because there's no access to the battery, and when you've gone 90 days worth of snapping, it just craps out. 90 days worth of pictures at 1280 by 960? Not exactly good, is it?
No, but you can put them on the wedding table, can't you?
Yeah, I suppose that would be good, wouldn't it? But for £12, it's a good outlay. I mean, I don't see a market for this at all.
Why would you put it on the wedding table when everyone there already has a smartphone that's like 8 megapixels?
Exactly. I mean, the resolution here is, like I say, 1280 by 960, so that's one down below 2 megapixels.
1.3?
1.3-ish, yeah.
You know what? It's going to be those really, really bad goodie bags you get when you go to a business that isn't doing very well.
Oh.
It's going to be that sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, when they give you a free gift and it's this camera, you know they hate you.
Yeah, that and a T-shirt that would only fit giant haystacks.
They're about to take you out the back and shoot you in the back of the head.
Exactly.
I've been watching too much Breaking Bad lately. I really have. I can't think straight. That's why I've grown a goatee. Never mind. Any thoughts, Chris? No?
It's crap.
It's crap. There we go, moving on.
Skip it.
Joby have released the UltraFit. This is a strap which allows you to sling your camera around the side of your body, and you can swing it up dead quick if you really need to. It's like a quick draw mechanism for your DSLR. The price, I'm looking for the price, £33 for a three-way camera strap, £41 if you want it immediately. I don't know why you'd buy this. The thing that put me off with this is it says ultra fit. Because when I get any kind of strap that fits around the front of my body, the last thing I look is ultra fit. It just kind of accentuates all that's bad with my physique, thanks to Guinness.
Well, you shouldn't wear size 46 double G bras or whatever it is.
I've stopped wearing that now, I have to say.
Good. As long as
I can't feel it. It makes me feel inadequate.
Yeah, I don't want to mention it. I just got a really, really dirty look across the room when I said that.
I mean, it's ultra-fit layered pad technology for lightweight support without the bulk of thick padding. It sounds like a bra more than it does a camera strap.
But to be honest, if you're wearing something all day, having a comfortable strap is preferable.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
Definitely is, and you need something with a slight bit of elasticity. You know, the old-fashioned ones that you get with your camera, after a couple of hours, they really do start chafing on your neck and various things. So it's good to have, you know, a comfortable strap. And if you're going to an event and you're, you know, not basically going to have the camera, if you're going to an event to take pictures and that's all you're going to do, you don't need one of these, because your camera should be in your hand at the ready every second. You know, there's no two ways about it. But if you're sort of semi at the event, you know, say a gig or something, you're at the event, but you're also there to enjoy what you're there to see, then this is possibly more of an idea, because it's sort of dual purpose. It's putting it down the side so you can get on with actually enjoying yourself and quick access. But, you know, it's neither one thing or the other. I mean, again, it's a compromise, and it makes sense. But
£41?
Yeah, I don't want to sound even more bitter than I did 5 minutes ago. It makes sense, but not quite that much sense.
Any thoughts, Chris?
I think this would actually be really handy for event photography, because a lot of times when I shoot weddings, I have a backup body. And what I like to do is, I have a main lens that I use most of the time, but sometimes I have to have like an extra lens, like an extra wide or an extra long lens or something. And I'd like to put that on and just have that at the ready. You know, so I can set down one camera, pull the other one up, and have my extra, you know, my different lens range ready to go.
I was going to say, actually, with these kind of things, you'd be better off if you get, you tend with these things to have a stud that'll attach to your body on the 3/8 connection. But actually, you'd be probably better off having lenses that had an adapter ring on them, so that you had a 3/8 connection on the lens, and have two or three of these, and then just hold the body in your hand and switch to the lenses that you needed.
We saw something like that recently. It was almost like a holster that went around a belt.
Oh, no, that looked that was a sad little thing that made you look like Batman.
The theoretical idea is
photographic Batman.
Yeah, I mean, I've never needed to swap lenses that quick, but to have one that's, or even if you had two complete bodies around your neck, you know, one free and one on one side, then it would work. But £41 for a piece of rubber strapping, although it does look a nicely made piece of rubber strapping, has to be said.
Well, possibly we need to move on to camera holsters.
Yes, absolutely. That's just what the world needs. And they could be £80 each as well.
If I'm selling them, definitely.
Canon have released, they're not out yet, they're all on pre-order at the moment. You can get a Canon EF 24-70 f2.8 lens, and also there's a 35mm 2.8 lens as well. Now, we covered a 35mm last week for Nikon, didn't we? So this is kind of a bite back, if you like, on those focal lengths. I've looked at some of the pictures of these, and they're nice and sharp, but the thing that put me off was the f4 lens, sorry, the 24-70 is an f4, and the f2.8 in this is £2,000, so $2,500.
Oh.
And the f4 is coming in at £1,599, so that's over $2,100. And I just think, okay, the 2.8 is overpriced anyway, but I get why it's a 2.8. If you look at the Sigma in this exact lens, I mean, it looks exactly the same. The Sigma at 24-70 2.8 is only £599, and it's a good lens. It's a very good lens. I've used one. This thing at 24-70 at f4 at £1,599, £1,600 is too expensive by a half.
I think we were talking about this a week or two ago.
And we were talking about the Nikon, weren't we? Having a 35mm, not the Canon.
No, we were talking about these two lenses, in fact.
Right.
I think one of the advantages of this, the F4 has, they're both optical image stabilized, ultrasonic focus, L series glass. But one area where it sort of has an advantage with the 2.8 is a much better close focusing range.
Right.
But I think I mentioned too, Canon already has a series of sort of like lower priced F4. L-series lenses, they have a 17-40.
Oh, I was really surprised. When I saw this one, I was looking at this thinking, yeah, no, it was Nikon that we spoke about last week that brought out some lenses in this kind of range. And I was gobsmacked at the price when I went on Wex and looked. It was £1,600 for an F4 24-70. I thought that was a ludicrous price. And in a current economic climate, camera providers just really are not thinking about the prices of the lenses at all. Any thoughts, Alex?
I just wonder, is this all to do with the fact that the sensors are getting to the point where the megapixelage is so high that it's like we spoke about the D800, the tolerances are so small now that to have more chance of having a properly sharp image as we're used to in the past, we're actually going to have to push the quality of the lenses up. You know, because I think maybe the tolerances of the cameras are too tight now. That right. You know, in the old days, you could have had an 18 megapixel, like your Canon. You know, you could have an 18 megapixel Canon with, you know, big, I don't know what's the holes are they, phosphors? I can't remember what they're called. The actual holes that the light goes through. You know, comparatively, they are large holes. They let through a lot more light. Mm. And therefore, it's going to be a lot sharper to start off with. So you can use a good quality 2.8 lens, stop it down to f11, and you're going to have a really nice pin-sharp picture. But would you get a pin-sharp picture with that same quality lens on one of these new cameras where they've pushed the sensors so far? Maybe this is the point. To get the same quality, you need to now actually up the lens game to the point of medium format quality lenses.
Let's be really honest here, mate. Let's say the three of us sit down with this lens at 24-70 f/4 and the Sigma lens at 28-70 f/2.8, and we do identical setups on identical cameras and we take identical images. Are you, me and Chris going to see any difference whatsoever without going down to very, very minute levels?
I would have said you might get some aberration around the edges, which will be a bit different, but I reckon the centre three quarters would be identical to us. But we're not, I mean, one of the things I like about doing the show with you guys is we're not photographic pedants.
No, I mean, I am hypercritical. If it's not right, I don't do it.
No, but we're not pedants. It's not like, well, no, it can be 0.1% better, so it's worth paying the extra 10 grand for the lens. I don't believe in that. You know, you don't, and nor does Chris. But there are many people out there, especially people that have a company that are buying the equipment for them. You know, if you're a photographer that works for a company, I know there's less and less of those people around. But if you are, then you go to your company and say, I need the new, slightly better lens, and there's a budget. They spend the budget, and you spend the budget on what you want to spend it on. That is the type of person that will buy this lens because it's not coming out of their own pocket.
Chris, any thoughts?
I'm not sure if I agree entirely. You know, I can definitely see photographers who are, they want, you know, the quality of L-series glass and perhaps want, you know, I mean, the F4 lens is smaller and significantly lighter weight, and maybe that fits in with what they do better.
But I mean, you're talking about a comparison of the 2.8 versus the 4.
4, right.
I'm talking about a comparison of the Sigma 2.8 versus the Canon 4. I don't think you're going to see a huge difference.
I've for a long time used a Tamron 20-75 2.8, and it was, I want to say it was around $600-$700 when I bought it new, and that was half the price of the comparable Canon at the time. And the fact is that I didn't do as much professional work when I got it, so I wasn't concerned with having the top quality. I mean, the build quality is decent, but it's now probably, I want to say, almost 10 years old. Roughly, it has not held up over the years. And, you know, there's definitely times where I wish I had the Canon because my focusing would be faster. You know, the lens would be more solid. It would probably be in better shape at this point. So, you know, will the Sigma have the same critical sharpness? You know, maybe, probably not at 2.8. Almost definitely not at 2.8.
Well, the Canon definitely won't at 2.8. That's the point.
Well, I mean, neither will a Sigma. I mean, the Sigma will definitely be worse at 2.8. I mean, I've seen a lot of comparisons, like MTF charts and stuff, looking at these different focal lengths and different apertures. You know, the Sigma's definitely be comparable at, you know, f5.6 to f16. It's going to be comparable. Wide open, which is a lot of the time when I use a lens like this, I'm using it wide open. So, you know, the sharpness at that aperture is more important to me, so I would choose the Canon in that case.
Even for the extra $1,500.
Yeah.
There you go.
Rich kids don't understand the way the rest of us live, do they?
No, mate. That's right. Certainly my customers wouldn't be able to tell the difference, and I look more closely than them, and I wouldn't either.
If you charged them an extra 50 quid a shot, they'd notice.
We're not going to comment on these, but just to get through them so that we've covered them, just to let you know that a service called Circ will be out there soon. This is supposed to be from the people that make the iFi cards. They're going into cloud photo storage. If you are in cloud photo storage and you've got your stuff with PhotoPic, I'd get it off as fast as you can because they've gone bust and they've pulled out, and your photos may have disappeared. If you're storing in the cloud as a backup, then fair enough, you're going to be all right. But if you stored all your images there and you haven't got the originals, dope. And the last thing that's out there is the Low Pro Roller Pro. It's a roller bag that's got loads and loads of space in it, and it weighs a ton when you fill it with your glass, and you'll never pick it up anyway. So, but there you go. And based on the fact that it's Low Pro, it's really friggin' expensive. So questions. We were going to go through all of those, but as usual, who knows? Questions. First question, actually, if you remember last week, we asked a question about the camera adding £10. Well, that was from a guy named Andrew Bailey, and he's written an email in. I think I was drunk when I sent the camera adding £10 question because I didn't have any memory of asking it. I was on the train listening to the show last week and thought, weird, someone's asked the very question I was going to send in. I was pretty shocked to then hear you read my name out at the end. It was my Fight Club moment. Interesting answers, though. Thanks very much, Andrew Bailey. There you go, mate. You're more than welcome, pal. I've just deleted the doc that's got the questions in. What an arse.
Hi, fellas. Love the show. I currently shoot with a 450D. I take it that's a Canon, is it?
It is, I.
And I'm thinking of moving up to shoot video. I'm not overly invested in lenses, but have more than I would like to start shoveling out on eBay. So we'll stick with Canon. What DSLR video should I be looking to move to? My budget is £1,500 to £2,000. Thanks, Brian from Wiltshire. You and you can go first for a change.
Thanks, mate. My point on this one would be that £1,500 to £2,000 is vastly overpriced for what you want for a video DSLR. I sat down with the 60D and the 600D when I bought the 600D, and I looked at the video and I couldn't tell the difference. And I actually went back to Dave Dugdale, who came on this show, who's a little bit more clued up on the video than I am. And I asked him what he thought on it, and he said he couldn't tell the difference between the two. I've also spoken to another guy since who's got a 5D Mark III, and he says he can't tell the difference between the 600D and the 5D Mark III. So from my viewpoint, I would say probably down to as low, I don't know about the 5500, that maybe that, or 55 rather, 550 rather, that may actually shoot 1080p and be decent quality as well, and maybe no change in the sensor. But from a video perspective alone, then I'd say 600D. But I'd watch out for the stills, because you get faster frame rates if you go up to the 60D or the 5D Mark III, and you also will probably get better quality. Certainly with the 5D Mark III, you'll get better quality of stills from that.
I would say with £2,000, couldn't he go up to a 5D Mark II? I mean, the prices have really dropped. I mean, it would just be a consideration, because with the full frame sensor, you do get a different look to your images, especially when you're talking about like your dealing with depth of field and things like that. I would be more happy with the 5D Mark II as a still camera, and then still, you know, and then still be able to get really great footage. That my understanding, and I haven't got to spend a lot of time with both of them, but the 5D Mark III definitely has a better focusing system for stills. So if you do anything that's, you know, not in a studio or something like that, you might.
I'm not
towards the Mark III, but I think the price is out of this range that he's talking about here.
I'm not great. I don't love shooting stills with the 600D. I'll always go back to 1DS Mark II. I just can't stand it for stills, but if I'm stuck and I'm out somewhere and I haven't got the other one with me, it's fair enough. It's easy enough. Alex, I mean, please chuck in on this question, but as well, if there must be a parallel with Nikon here as to where you start in the video market within Nikon.
I mean, the video is sort of, I mean, the very top of the range is slightly better. I mean, the 800 people rave about for video, but it's sort of much of a muchness unless you're going to pay top dollar. So what you've got to decide is your compromise between video and still. And I personally think, from what I saw that you shot on the 600D, where you're not going to do any better on video without going to spend £10,000 on a video camera. I mean, I know someone's going to shoot me down with that, but talking about from DSLR level. And, you know, your concern about the quality of the stills, well, you've got a £6,000 camera as an alternative. I would imagine that the stills on that camera are more than adequate for the vast majority of people that don't have a £6,000 alternative.
Yeah, I mean, I as far as video goes, I'm very happy with the 600D. I don't see any point in buying anything more. And if I wanted to buy a second camera now for video, I would buy another one of those. I don't feel the need to go any higher.
And bearing in mind, you must obviously spend $89 on that funny, weird thing that looks like a protractor that sits on the front of it.
I'll need two of those then, yeah, bugger. I hadn't thought of that. Git. Question two. Hi, gents. Following on from the great question of the week about your passion for photography and it waning, and the one about favourite photographers, I have a simple one. How would you rate yourself in the differing aspects or disciplines of photography work, e.g. portraits, landscapes, glamour, art, video, etc.? And does a discipline that you know you aren't great at keep you from taking work in that area? Thanks. That's a stupid question at the end. Thanks, Gerald Smythe of Bournemouth. P.S. Thanks for all the great tips and help you've given over the past year or so for me. It's changed my enthusiasm immensely. I don't know that we've turned him off or turned him on, but you're welcome, Gerald, I think.
I think there's no stupid questions.
just whatever Chris says.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the bit where he says, would it stop us taking work in an area that we're not great at? No.
Says the newly qualified videographer.
Exactly. Right, so portraits, landscapes, glamour, art, video, etc. What do you think you're good at and what do you think you're bad at then? Pawsey, start us off. In the photography thing.
I'm not even sure if I could say that I'm unequivocally good at these things, but here's what I like to shoot. Definitely like shooting glamour or fashion photography. I like shooting architecture.
Yep.
And I like shooting product shots. And I also really like doing live band photography. Like,
what do you suck at?
What do I suck at? Everything?
No, come on.
Here's what I was going to say about it is those are the things that I like to shoot. So when I shoot them, I really pay attention. You know what I mean? Like I work really hard at it.
Yeah, you've got experience and you shoot them better because you're enjoying it.
Right. And so I feel like I shoot that stuff better because I'm really into it. Maybe like weddings, and I wouldn't even say that I'm not good at it because I don't make good images, but that, at least when I shot them on my own, as an assistant, I think I do a lot better because I'm backing someone up and they have their vision and I'm just helping them achieve it. But when it comes to shooting weddings, I don't know, maybe I just got really bad clients or whatever. I was just not happy doing any of that work. And so sometimes I think it just wasn't that good.
Hmm. Okay. Good question. Alex, what do you think you're great at and what do you think you're crap at?
Well, I think the best word Chris used in there was vision. Now, I mean, there's certain things that I know I'm probably okay at, and it's like what I do for a living. I mean, for instance, today I had to shoot a load of silver. Now, silver, you know, it's not straight. You know, they're cups and various things, so there isn't an angle in the room, and there's not an angle you're not going to get a reflection of something going on. You know, it's 360 degrees, this thing, you know? But through experience and banging my head against brick walls over the years, I can go in there, shoot something within an hour or two, and I know that I'm going to be able to give the customer exactly, if not better than they'd ever expected, because of, you know, for the normal photographer to go and do something like that, you know, it's one of those almost you think it's impossible. And to a certain extent it is, but you've got to know what parts are possible and what parts that you can disguise, for want of a better word, because there is no physical way of being in the same room as something that's 100% reflective. You know, you can't do it. But there are ways and means, and it's all a matter of confidence in your own ability. But I think the word vision, if you've got a vision, as in if you are excited about what you want to produce, then that's great. Anything that I don't have a vision for, I don't necessarily care for fashion photography. Now, if I would, like Chris said, if I was following Chris around and he said, I really want this look, I really want that, technically, I know how to get it. But inspirationally, I don't have that bug. I don't have that excitement. You stick an amazingly wonderful piece of art in front of me, I've got an appreciation for art, and I want to reflect that appreciation in what I produce. So the artistic side of things is my game. Portraits, unless I like the person, I take, honestly, unless, because I'm not a portrait photographer, unless I like the person, I'm not sure I produce a particularly good portrait. Landscapes, I love the natural world. It's not too difficult, but I think so much of it is you can be technically proficient at anything, but if your heart isn't in it, you're not going to be the best at it, and you're not going to have the confidence either. Mm.
I think whatever you've got to practice, whatever you want to do, having a desire to shoot a certain discipline is a big part of it, and then practicing that discipline. And being critical about yourself as well, not just worrying about what other people go. Because if you show them to your family, they'll go, wow, that's really great. Because it's better than what they expect, as you've just said. Whereas, as you know, your own eyes looking at it going, I know I can do better. I know I can do better. I know I can do better. So, I mean, I'm, for a guy who shoots 99% inanimate objects and people working and commercial things, I do really well with portraits. I get the best out of people. I do take really, really good portraits of people. Landscapes, I suck at. For the life of me, I love trying to get landscapes, but I'm always disappointed with the results. And it doesn't matter how much I keep cocking it up, I still come back to keep trying to do landscapes. Whenever we go on holiday, I have to set up, I have to try and shoot a landscape while I'm away. And it drives me mad because I'm crap at it. I'm bloody awful at it.
I'm sure you're not. But the thing is, though, I mean, if you look to books of historical landscape photography. I mean, I go to a lot of societies where, you know, they were adventurers, they were travellers, and I'm looking at photography from the 1880s upwards of, you know, landscapes, because that's what the adventurers and the travellers and the explorers did. And that's given me an enthusiasm and an idea of an artistic way of copying their way of doing it. And that's what makes you excited. And the most important thing of all of this is if you want to be a pro in anything, there's a point where you actually have to become confident. It's not like a lot of these things. There's no point in being bashful. You have to be, not 100%, because that's cocky, but you have to be really confident that you can turn up and whatever they throw at you in your speciality, you're going to be able to walk out of there with a happy client. And you need that confidence. If you haven't got it, then go clean windows, as we say.
that's an in-joke.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
Question three. Hey, guys. Do you have any tips for me to... Sorry, I came to you, Chris, didn't I?
Hey, no. No, I'm just saying, right. You said, just hey.
Taking
I was
the
saying,
piss.
Hey.
Damien, he knows where you live. Hey, guys, do you have any tips to help me improve my manual focus skills and to help me with tracking moving objects in manual focus? I love trying to capture birds and deer, etc., while they're moving, but I'm not the best. Thanks. Damien Harrington, Detroit. Anyone?
There is only one thing.
Yeah, keep practicing.
Exactly, that is it.
Constantly.
I'm sorry, there is no shortcut.
I think the one thing I would say is try and slowly increase the angle if you get... I mean, it's hard if you're shooting wildlife, but certainly if you've got a friend with a dog and you can set the dog down and get them to call the dog over and you can photograph the dog, go from a cross focus this way, left to right as a pan, is very easy to do because there's marginal changes in focus. Just slowly change that angle so they're coming more and more and more towards you until eventually they're coming straight at you. If you've got a friend who does like birds of prey or something like that, again, change the angle at which the bird flies so that it becomes more and more acute and more towards you, and just keep practicing.
But in a funny way, like that thing that I'm messing about with the video cameras, if you know that you want to pan 130 degrees just as a figure, from left to right, before you get your deer and you know roughly where this deer is going to be in the distance, it's almost like an athlete doing the stretches before you start. Get that muscle memory in your head. Do it 5 or 10 times before the deer runs out. Know roughly where you want to do, because once you've got that motion in your body, it's an awful lot easier to follow something that you've recently done movement-wise than it is by doing it cold. If you know roughly, you know the bird's going to be flying from that tree to that tree, practice it. Practice it 10 times. Just get that flow. It's almost like a dance movement. Get that flow, and when it does fly, your muscle memory will take care of 50% of the shot for you.
Yeah. Getting used to speed of lens and that kind of stuff. I was talking the other week about the pancake lens, and I've got to say I struggle with the travel on that. The travel never feels fluid. It never feels like other lenses that I've got. Different, completely different. And you've got to practice with all your lenses, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely.
If you've got a question for us, it's dead simple. Send it to us. We'll answer it. We'll give you an answer. Don't know whether it's the right one or not, but we'll try.
Might not be one you like.
Well, yeah, exactly. BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com is the email address. Send it to us and we will read it out. This podcast and all of the others is brought to you by UK2. We still come at them every week, and it's finally hard to say something different each time and how good they are. But, I mean, we've had the old glitch with iOS, and we've had phenomenal download figures just lately. And the reason may be I saw it maybe because of iOS, but UK2 picked up all the bandwidth, didn't say a word. 114 terabytes last month, which is kind of a bit of an increase for us. And they never say boo to a goose. They support British Tech, and as a listener of British Tech, if you want us to stick around, you need to support them. The current charge that we'd be getting for bandwidth, if I had to pick up 114 terabytes of bandwidth, I would be paying £480 a month for that server, which is just ludicrous. There's no way I'm going to get that from anyone else. UK2 picked that up. Yeah. UK2 picked that fee up without a problem. It doesn't matter. We have no limit on bandwidth whatsoever. As many people want to download this show, the entire planet, they pick it up. And that's how much they're worth to us. So please, 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 if you want to buy anything for the web, domains, VPS, VPN, co-location services, any of that kind of stuff, check out UK2 first. And do bear in mind when you're looking at their prices, if you go through the sponsors page on our website, we're going to get the kudos for Sendy, but also you're going to get voucher codes there. Stick in those voucher codes depending on the services that you bought, and you could clear your basket. Absolutely. If you buy anything, try and buy it in individuals and then get the maximum from your codes as well. So if you want a domain name, get your domain name and then get your VPS afterwards, because that'll save you a ton of money. Check them out, uk2.net. We love them. They love us. It's a big loving. Mm-mm. And the European Podcast Awards. We have got nominated six categories. Six of our podcasts are nominated. That's this show, the Photo Show, the Big Show, the Mac Show, the Gamer Show, the iOS Show, and the Media Show are all nominated for European Podcast of the Year Awards. So please, 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 if you can, get over to our website, and there's a little banner there you can click on. Click on those shows that you want to vote for. Please vote for all of them if you possibly can. And when you've shut your browser down and opened it again, it'll let you vote again. So vote again, please. I want to win this year. We got third last year with the Mac Show. We were third in our category. So third best podcast in Europe. I'll take it. But thanks very much if you can vote. It means a lot. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Forsman?
I'm not a crook.
Not a crook.
Yeah. As usual, I have my regular writing gig at Ars Technica, so you can see me there almost every day, not multiple times a day.
Excellent.
And on the Twitters at ForsMac, I'm always there.
Yeah.
Tweet.
And you'll be on the Mac Show in a few moments?
I will not be on the Mac.
Oh, I thought you were on. Oh, okay then. Yeah. Never mind. That's another start. Anyone want to go on the Mac Show?
What, in the chat room? I'm taking my dear friend that's been kind enough to let me use her facilities out for something to eat in a moment. So,
oh, that's very good of her.
Not me.
Send me the bill. And Alex, where can we get you, sir?
Get me Alex G Fox on Twitter. That would be really kind. I'll tell you what, right, not now because it's not finished, but again, my dear friend that's the most wonderful artist sitting next to me.
What's her name?
Her name's Odile Kidd, O-D-I-L-E-K-I-D-D. Fantastic artist, but when I finally finish doing her website properly, I'll announce all the details on the photo show. But you know, if you just want to look some of the best wildlife art you'll ever see in your life.
They are good. I've seen them.
Yeah,
tell her about the deal at hosting with UK2.
She is hosted by UK2.
Ah, there we go. Thank you, Ms. Kidd.
Done and done.
Love your artwork. And done. Love your generosity. Enjoy your food.
There you go. Perfect.
We'll see you again next week. We'll be back with the first show as normal. Till then, take care. Keep clicking.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.